B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
And now, I'm just trying to spell it out for the listener.
Felger and Mask.
S-T-O-O-P-I-D.
T-E-P-I-D.
B-O-B.
Boob.
Isn't that Bob?
Felger and Mask.
Q-U-I-T quick.
Okay, thank you. No, spell up for me too. I'm an idiot.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Could you make an argument that we could have solved the problem in spring training instead of waiting to early June to make the, get the balls taken care of?
Well, look, I think that you can always argue that it might have been done a different way and a better way. And, I accept that fact. My judgment was if we showed tangible activity, what do I mean by that? We're collecting baseballs. The people would, we communicated. We showed tangible activity. I thought there would be self-correction. I was wrong. We collected information that showed us how serious the problem was. We felt we were at a point in time that we had to act.
Hour number three here, Felger and Mez. It's Rob Manfred on yesterday with Christopher Mad Dog Russo talking about the removal of substances, adhesives on the mound that pitchers use to improve their spin rate and improve offense in Major League Baseball. Really, that was the ultimate goal, to get more balls in play, get more action on the field. And so before we get to Manfred's comments in particular, and you heard them right there, let me ask you guys quickly here. Do you think it's worked? Do you think it's been now, 3 weeks since officially adhesives have been removed from the game? I think it went into effect on June 21st. Today is July 14th. Obviously, we haven't had any major league games this week, but there was about a 3-week period. If you go all the way back to the beginning of June when MLB announced that it would be making the change, that's basically a 5-6 weeks period now that we've had to watch the game without adhesives in it. Do you feel like it's made a difference?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it feels like it's settled down, hasn't it? It doesn't feel to me like you're having these change rage meltdowns with the likes of Garrett Richards and Garrett Cole like you had a couple of weeks ago. And you had to expect that was going to happen. I mean, I didn't know it was going to be as ridiculous as it got there for a little bit, but it does feel like it's settled down. And with that, I feel like it's working.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I don't know that no pitchers are doing it. I don't know how diligently the umpires are still checking people.
So there's only been one suspension, right?
Correct. And it was, I can't remember the name even anymore. It was a reliever
Santiago?
In Seattle. Yeah, that sounds right. I don't know how diligently they're checking anymore. Like, there were videos, galore for like the first couple of days. But since then, that feels like it's quieted down. But look, I mean, I'll trust them on their metrics. If hitting is coming back and numbers are up across the board, then yeah, I'd say it's working, at least for now.
Okay, so here's what I can tell you just quickly, based on some of the numbers I've been able to uncover. That, again, the announcement was made on June 3rd that they were going to change the rules. The rules didn't actually get changed until June 21st. So there was about a 2.5-week lag there while they let everyone get acclimated. The numbers from June 3rd and the numbers from June 21st are basically the same. So in other words, just the announcement that a change was coming.
A lot of guys said, let's clean it up.
Correct. Have inspired guys to get rid of the adhesives on the mound and start making the change right away. People like Garrett Richards may have waited a little bit longer and decided to go completely cold turkey, and I think he's paid the price for it. I think that Garrett Richards has looked completely lost on the mound, whereas other guys started to make the transition a little bit earlier. Overall, in Major League Baseball, pre-June 3rd, the average in the game was at 236. Since then, the number has gone up to 246, almost 247. So you've got a 10 or 11-point increase in batting average. Strikeouts have gone down. Walks have gone down. Hit batters have basically remained the same. Spin rate has gone down. Okay, so the reason I mentioned hit batters is because you hear that theory all the time that allowing pitchers to get a grip on the ball prevents hitters.
Don't be safer. Yeah.
Yeah, it's bull crap. It's
complete total bullcrap.
You said that from day one.
It's bullcrap. It's a lie. It's a complete lie. So home runs have gone up a little bit, which you would expect. Runs have gone up a little bit, which you would expect. But I will say the increases are not as pronounced as I thought they would be. So typically offense goes up in June, July, and August anyway because the weather gets warmer. So what I would love to see is some sort of study that tries to take weather into account and whether or not the effects have not been as pronounced, I thought, in terms of offense. Now, I will say that I think more balls are in play. This is a long way of me saying Jones and Murray. I keep saying this because Jones is sitting right next to me, Murray, and you're in the other room, so I keep forgetting you're there. It's only a step. This is only a step. I want more. I don't think this is enough. I don't think in and of itself the game has reached a point where we can all say now, oh, well, the quality of product is getting better. You've taken the glue out of the game. Offense is going to go up. It's going to continue to go up. I don't feel that way. I think you need more.
So are you saying it's not working?
No, I think it is a little bit.
It's working, just you'd like to see more.
Yes, I think we can all agree with that.
Well, then what statistics do you need to see to dramatically change that you would say, okay, now it's working?
I want to see the average go up another 10 points, maybe even 15. I want to see it get to 255, 260.
Well, then we need steroids back.
Okay, no, we don't. Mm. No, we don't. That'll affect home runs. It won't affect batting average. Mm. You should be able to get more balls in play and more batting average. You should get higher batting average just by getting more balls in play. And so, to me, you still have to increase the contact rate. I don't think the contact rate is good enough yet. So I don't want an average throughout baseball of 247. I don't think that's high enough. I want something closer to 260 in this day and age. In this day and age. Years ago, the number was always 250. You know, that was sort of the number. Anything north of that was pretty good. Anything south of that was below average. I think the number now needs to be closer to 260. You know, around the steroid era, maybe at the peak of it, I think the number was up over 270 or right around it.
That's why I'm saying get steroids back. You'll boost the average.
Okay, so that's too high. So I want it somewhere in that 260 range. And I still think they've got a little ways to go. Manfred did touch on some other stuff as well here. And Billy, let's just play one of these now, if we could. I'm sort of jumping the gun here a little bit. But you guys both mentioned the seven-inning doubleheaders. So, Billy, if we play this again is the exchange between Rob Manfred and Christopher Mad Dog Russo on the seven-inning doubleheaders.
I want to make clear, just because we have used seven-inning doubleheaders and the extra inning rules for 2 years in COVID, that doesn't mean they're a lock. You know, I mean, that's point one. With respect to the seven-inning doubleheaders, there's lots of issues surrounding that. You know, competitive issues that we have to work our way through. I'm not sure that it's going to, and I said it today, I'm not sure it's going to be part of our landscape going forward.
Okay, seven-inning doubleheaders, which one of you said you were against it again?
No, we both like them, and Jones likes them more than the man on second.
I like the seven-inning doubleheaders more than I like the extra inning rule.
I love it. I love the seven-inning doubleheader. Do you remember the game early in the year, Murray, where the Red Sox played the Twins? In fact, the Red Sox haven't had a ton of these this year, but they played a doubleheader against Minnesota early in the year with seven innings, and I thought, this is awesome. This is absolutely great.
Yeah, was that the one that, like, the air raid siren went off?
Sounds right. It was that series. Yeah. It was that series, Murray. And if you remember, I'll tell you what I love about it. The whole sort of pace of the game changed. And when I mean the pace of the game, all of a sudden you get to, like, the third inning, you're like, well, now you're in the middle innings. This is, you know, you've got to take a total. You can't just look at it and say, you know, we'll stay behind one zip. We'll score in the fourth or the fifth. We'll get back in it. The
whole game feels frantic.
It does. The game's more condensed, and the game could use that. And so this crossed my mind last night, and it'll never happen. But if you went to seven innings permanently, you know what that would do for viewing?
That would be awesome.
Oh, I think it would change. Like every game, seven innings.
Right.
Every game, seven. And then if you got to the playoffs and you said, okay, we're going to play nine, I don't think they would ever do that. But in fact, forget that I even said that.
No, but it's a great point because there's always that typical lull in a game, in a regular nine-inning game.
In the middle.
Yeah, there's an immediacy that you would get with a seven-inning game. That it's that the pace is always just going to be bang, 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 bang. Like you said, by the third inning, you're in the middle innings.
I mean, you do. You fall asleep a little bit in the middle of the game. Right. So at the beginning, it's OK. Let's see how this thing starts. You go through two or three innings, see how it is. And then you say, OK, well, I can sort of check out here and get back in the seventh and see what happens. Now you eliminate that. I love it. But do you realize if you played every game seven innings, that you would cut off the equivalent of 324 innings, right? 324 innings.
Sounds like not enough.
Okay, divide by nine, 36 games. It's like chopping 36 games off the schedule. Wouldn't that be perfect?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
That'd be great.
So you get down to 126. Think of that, 126 games. That's what the volume of the schedule would be. The same innings you would play, you know, in a 126-game
right.
schedule
the
if you
season,
played nine.
The season would be as long. The owners would still get their gate. Right? I mean, there'd be advertising windows that the league would never go for. But, like, yeah, maybe somewhere down the line that's something that they could potentially go for because they're never going to cut the schedule from 162 to 128.
No shot.
Yeah.
Not without expanding playoffs. And, you know, they could go to 144 and add a round of playoffs to make the money back. Like, you could see something like that happening maybe. But really, if you chopped every game by two innings, it's the equivalent of chopping 36 games off the schedule. See, I'm stupid. I this is the kind of dork I am. I did this last night. I did the math.
No, like, you make a strong case for it. Like, it's good that you did.
Oh, that's a great number, isn't it? That's like the number to play. That would be the number to play in seven-inning games, which means they'd go 240.
Right, it'd be digestible, yeah.
Totally. Way better for the overall product. They'll never do it. They'll never do it.
No, you know why? And it's because the league really still does, and that they're going back and they're getting rid of these two things that I think that, you know, at least casual fans are into, and maybe it's helped bring some of them in. They will always, the game will always kowtow and bend over to the purists. They always do.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem. I hope that they're changing. Rob Manfred also addressed the extra inning rule, which obviously right now involves putting a runner on second base to start the 10th inning. We'll tell you what he said about that, and I'll tell you what the hidden story behind this entire discussion was between Manfred and Christopher Russo, and it's a big one, too. We'll do that next on Felger and Mazz.
It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mazz.
Those guys are always trouble. I want nothing to do with this guy.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
I think the extra inning rule is a tighter call. It's not a sure thing, but I think it could survive. It's kind of outkicked its coverage, you know.
How about playing it in its 12th inning and sort of split
the baby? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways you could split the baby, but, you know, 16 inning games is a long time. And, you know, we're going to have conversations about it. I just, like I said, my comment, I think the first one is the most important one. Just because we did it in COVID, you can't necessarily assume they're going to survive.
Did you do it in the 12th inning?
Mad dog.
I kind of like that idea.
Okay, if they're going to introduce the runner in the 10th, don't try to talk the commissioner out of it by saying the 12th. I love Mad Dog. but let's not add needless time onto the game. I like the extra inning rule. And again, you heard Manfred say the same thing there to Christopher Mad Dog Russo that he said about the seven-inning doubleheader games, which is, well, you know, just because it was here because of COVID doesn't mean we're necessarily going to keep it. So he's pinning it on COVID. Both of those things he's pinning on COVID. Well, we had COVID rules. We had to spend less time on the field, so we had to initiate these rule changes, Murray, all this kind of stuff to facilitate faster baseball.
Yeah, what bugs me about it is they treated that as like, well, you know, we had to do this because of the times that we were living in, when they should be looking at it as in a way as like a silver lining. Like, okay, we adapted, we were able to get that season in 2020, but we were able to do it in a way that we could tinker and find new things that work for the game. It was just the way he's talking about it and how they're now treating it is like, well, it was just it was a necessary evil that we had to deal with in 2020. We never actually thought about keeping that. No, like you tinkered, you found, I think, a couple of things that worked. Keep them.
Yeah, and that's how it came off. Like he looks at it and says, well, you know, use the term necessary evil. It's not what we wanted to do. We did it because of COVID. We're going to go back to doing what we did. That was the tone of the whole thing.
That's stinking thinking.
Okay, That's the tone of the whole thing. Let me give you one more before I tell you what I think is really going on here. And that is, Manfred was also asked by Mad Dog about the shifts, right? And, you know, I'm not gonna plant a seed in your mind, because Jones and I actually talked about this a little bit before the show. So here is, and I had the same response to this comment that Jones did. Here is Manfred on shifts.
The way I was asked the question was, you know, the writer said, I've talked to a bunch of front offices, seems to be a ton of interest in doing something about the shift. I said, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I have the same read of my own constituency. And the reason for that is, you know, people feel that shifts have changed the game in a way that is not positive, really affected left-handed hitters and offense. And when they look at it, they say, this is not like changing the number of innings in a game. The change would create a visual where people see baseball the way they were used to seeing it, as opposed to having a short fielder in right field. So, yeah, there's sentiment in favor of it. There's no question about that.
Now, does that have to be agreed upon with the Players Association?
Yeah, all these changes have to be negotiated with the MLBPA. So, like he asked me both sides of the coin. I said, I know where my people are. You know, you want to know where the players are? You got to talk to Tony Clark.
You want to know where the players are, you got to talk to Tony Clark. All these things have to be negotiated with the MLBPA, and the union has been an obstruction and a pain in the ass to deal with all these issues from the very beginning. So here's the part of the story that Manfred is not disclosing that everyone needs to acknowledge. They're negotiating the CBA. It's up at the end of the year. So what do I think baseball wants? I think baseball likes the seven-inning doubleheaders. I think baseball likes the runner on second to start the 10th. I think baseball wants to eradicate the shift. So the reason why Manfred got his back up when the guy asked him the question in the writer's session, and if you heard him say, you heard him say at the very beginning there, Murray, the way it was presented to me by the writers was, well, I've talked to people in the game and they seem in favor of getting rid of the shift. Well, yeah, hey, look, I've talked to my own constituents here. As if to say, you're not telling me anything. You got defensive.
Yeah, you're not telling me anything. I don't know.
He got defensive. Like, yeah, I've talked to my own constituents. I know what they feel. I think the reason he got annoyed by that is because they don't want that out there. They don't want the players aware that they want to get rid of the shift.
Right. Because that gives the players, like, something they can bargain with. Like, oh, you guys want that? Give us something.
Exactly. So, and this is the same is true of the seven-inning doubleheaders. The same is true of the runner on second base. All of these things, baseball is now going to use them as bargaining chips at the table. They're going to sit there with the players and go, well, what do you guys want? Well, we want to get rid of the shift. We think that's better for our hitters. Okay, well, you know, if you guys want to do that, that's fine. We would like to make up for that in this other way. And then they'll ask for something else.
Right. The owners want a bigger piece of the pie or something like that.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. We want
the pitch clock.
It's a negotiation. Mm-hmm. So this is what they're going to do. Now, I don't think it's going to be, see, the number one thing the players want in this negotiation, I'm not shedding light on anything that people don't know. They want to fix free agency. They think free agency's broken, that there are only a handful of guys that hit the market. They don't sign till late. And then all of a sudden, there's a bunch of guys at the start of spring training that don't have jobs that end up with undermarket deals. So the star players eventually are getting their money, but the owners have now used the market against the players. I think they've colluded. They will never admit that, but I think it's an orchestrated campaign to break the players. And so that's why there is no offseason in baseball now. The thing drags on forever. There's no activity.
No hot stove.
Right, nothing.
Nothing fun.
It doesn't happen till after the new year. It used to be they wanted everything wrapped up by Thanksgiving.
Right, so Dombrowski could go, you know, weekend at Bernie's vacation somewhere. Yeah,
exactly.
But those days of, like, Manny signing here and around Thanksgiving, like, that was awesome. That hasn't existed.
That was
like
great.
That hasn't existed in, like, a decade. Like
baseball, long, long time.
Baseball doesn't have much that's good, but, like, the uniforms in the All-Star game and the hot stove, they were, like, it. And, like, deadline day is pretty good. Opening day is okay. They don't have much. That was a good thing, and you're right, it's long gone.
So I think that's the number one thing the union wants. Now, the union is not going to sit there and say, all right, fine, we'll give you guys everything you want, or we'll take less in free agency because we want the seven-inning doubleheaders. That's not a fair trade. But it might get the pitch clock in. It might get on-field pace of play rules in. It might. Now, the adhesives they've already sort of implemented, and I think the union was on board with that one, too, because the pitcher, the hitters were pissed.
Right. Pitchers are only half the union. Yeah.
In fact, they're less. They're less. Most of the guys on the roster are positional players. And so, it's, you know, it's probably closer to 50-50 than it's ever been. But if you go by the 40-man roster, I think there's an edge in positional guys there. They're outnumbered. So they're going to support the positional players on that one. But the sneaky story there is that it's about the negotiation. This is why MLB is saying, well, you know, we may go back to what the rules were before. Because if the union says, no, 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 we like the new rules. Well, then the owners say, okay, well, then we want the pitch clock. We also want the pitch clock on top of that. And so...
Yeah, they're all bargaining chips.
Yeah, I think there's a chance that the on-field game will have some significant changes on it by the time we start 2022. The on-field game. The free agency and everything else, that's going to be a fight. But I think that the ground has been, or the framework has been laid here for some interesting changes on the field that are going to be permanent. And that I like. Quickly, Eric in a car on MLB. Go ahead, Eric.
Yes, guys. I want to know, the stickiness on the baseball things is really getting to people. And I just want to know, because I actually like it, because what have we had in baseball for years? We've had crook bats. We've had steroid users. We've had steroid users swinging crook bats, Sammy Sosa. We've had ridiculous sign stealing, and then we had loaded baseball. What is wrong with the pitchers trying to get their advantage back? I mean, I think it's beyond. It's something that they could have dealt with after and not in the middle of the season. I enjoy a good pitching duel sometimes. And as far as the shift, I know a lot of people say this and they don't care. I'm done with baseball if they'd be in the shift. Because that's what they know they're going to do. They're going to put red X's and not let you break for the ball until 3 seconds after it's hit. I'd just like to know you guys' view on all that hitting stuff. And okay. Great show. Have a good day.
Yeah, so look, I'll tell you, the reason why that they are reacting the way they are to the pitchers and the substances on the mound is pretty clear. The other stuff that you mentioned, cork bats, steroids, well, those produce offense. Some of the stuff you mentioned produces offense. The game was getting unwatchable. Not getting. It was. It became unwatchable. It still is unwatchable. It's a little bit better than it was 2 months ago, but it's the game's unwatchable. It's not the same game. And I'm sorry, the shift is part of the problem. So they're not going to put red X's on the field. Don't get stupid.
Although there has to be a compromise, though. I mean, this isn't something that's like, so this isn't like a newer idea. I mean, teams were shifting against Ted Williams in the 40s. So can there be a tweak to it?
Well, maybe a limited number of times you do it, Murray.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think you should outlaw it completely. I do. I think you should. I think it's gotten out of control.
I mean, given the choice, yeah. I mean, given the choice, the way the game is gone, I'd rather see more balls in play. So ban it? I mean, do I ultimately care that much? No. Like, ban the damn thing. But maybe there is a way to tweak it.
Well, and just the alarmist, like, slippery slope argument, I just reject. Like, they're not trying to put X's on the field. They're just trying to bring offense back.
Right? Yes.
And bring fans back so people will watch. And
what's
not,
next,
you know...
metal bats?
Right, exactly. Like, I don't think that's where this is heading. They're just trying to get people to watch their sport again. That's all.
I mean, so, you know, the Ted Williams thing you're talking about, not to give everybody a stupid history lesson that nobody wants. That was a rarity.
Yeah, Cassius Marsh is rolling his eyes very hard. Right?
Yeah.
it didn't happen. I mean, you know, there was one manager who did it against Ted Williams, and that was it. And, you know, and then it started happening a little more frequently. Now everybody does it on almost every lefty. And you see it on righties, too. It's really annoying. So it's ruined it's changed the approach of the hitter. It's had a pronounced impact on the way the game is played. So to me, that's got to be altered. You got to legislate it now because it's gotten out of control. Anyway, you mentioned Cassius Marsh Jones. Mm-hmm. We'll get back to him right after you get us caught up on it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Maz.
One big kindergarten classroom.
Really is. Just slinging poo at each other.
Daycare for grown-ups.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Patriot Way is pretty, it's extremely impressive. Like, they work they work day in and day out. Like their work ethic over there, what they, you know, instill is pretty legendary, you know. But they also treat players like crap, you know. You don't have a lunch period.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, so they're just like, just eat on your own?
Yeah, like you get there and you have to make time to eat in between meetings. And they're like 5 to 10 minute periods where I would literally go scoop food and put it in a cup and like just crush it real quick before I got to the next meeting.
Whoa.
It's just like there's no fun. There's no...
Really?
Well, that's what I got in trouble for saying, that they don't have fun. There's no like... Because Patriots fans hate me, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. If you probably one of the most hated like former Patriots.
Really?
Up there, top five at least.
Top five most hated.
100%.
That's how we began the show today. Cassius Marsh. Go ahead, say it. Who the F is Cassius Marsh? He was here for 9 games in 2017. 9.
I know it wasn't even double digits.
Yeah, gone by midseason. And so he's a nobody in Patriots history, really. Complete zero. Nobody. And in the past, we would have taken his comments, spit all over them, said, who the hell are you? You know, Patriots win championships. But now they're 7-9. Now Brady's gone. And I just wonder if maybe we should listen more carefully to these sorts of remarks about, the culture down there or what have you. And I'm not telling you that there's, you know, any major overhaul that has to take place. But the question is, do they do it differently down there now, Murray, because Brady's gone and they're 7-9?
Well, I think they're kind of forced to, because, again, I think this is the point. And I get trying to pile on or wanting to pile on Cassius Marsh right now. And you should. He's an ass clown. Like, who is this guy? You were a special teamer at best. You were a worthless piece in 2017. You didn't even play 10 games. But they miss Brady, and Bill misses Brady, not just on the field, like that's evident, but off of it as well, because without him around and buying in, Belichick, you know, he can't coach like a coach should. He can't be a taskmaster anymore. He can't do those things that he did, especially in the first like 10, 15 years of this 2 decades of dominance. You can't do that anymore without a guy like that buying in, day out, who's leading by example, especially with today's younger players that think that or look at it and say, well, Brady was the reason you won all these. Without him here, why are they going to listen to Bill and put up with this crap and him talking an hour and a half about the upcoming opponent and the history of that team?
Yeah, it's a miserable working environment. That's what I think. And if you're winning, people will tolerate it. People will tolerate the grind. You know, grinding is maybe a nicer way of putting it. But, like, you have an overbearing boss who is boring you to tears with the histories of these teams, as Cassius Marsh extended on in his interview. Like, the long, grueling practices. Like, if you're not winning, what's the trade-off? Like, why would you want to put up with that if you're not winning? So it was just 1 year. You know, they were 7-9. It's a one-off. Maybe it was an outlier. Blame COVID. Blame this. Blame that. But I don't know how much longer the leash is there for Bill in terms of, like, commanding respect in that room and not having players tune him out if they have another losing season or they miss the playoffs. The one thing that players would look the other way on is, all right, it sucks. We're grinding. He's overbearing. You know, he's running us into the ground. But we're going to win 12 games and be in the AFC championship game. We're going to have a shot at a Super Bowl. I'll put up with it. And to Jim's point, Brady's there leading the charge and putting up with it as well. Like, I think all of that goodwill, like everything Bill put in the bank over the years, like, it's already gone. It's already gone after the 1 year, because it's not a great working environment if you're not winning. Who would want to put up with that?
And so those, I'm sorry to cut you off, Maz, but those that, like, you know, because you have the hardcore Belichick people, like, and at least, you know, and I appreciate that. Like, pick a side. I said that last year. Pick a side. This is one thing I don't think you can ride the fence on. Like, well, you know, they were both equal. Shut up. Pick a side. So, all right. Yeah, I'm Team Brady on this. And so now look at his influence last year. Again, not just on the field, but off of it with the Bucs. And yes, it was a little bit bumpy at first, but so what, it's Bruce Arians, he's the reason everything changed down there? No, because he's been there. Those key players all took discounts to come back and keep the team together. It's never happened in the Super Bowl era. They're literally bringing back the same team. Penalties and turnovers, they ended up going down. And players played with discipline, especially during that playoff run, and they did what they were supposed to do. So, again, I will ask you, is that Bruce Arians? They won a Super Bowl. Is that Bruce Arians, or was it Brady? Is Brady the whole deal there? It's Brady.
Yeah, and Brady was his leverage here, too. Brady was Bill's leverage. He was his leverage in every way. He was his leverage at the negotiating table. He was his leverage on the field during games. He was his leverage in the locker room. Everywhere he went, Brady was his leverage. So, I look at what Cassius Marsh says now, and I said, well, this is now fair. I would have laughed in this guy's face. I would have laughed in his face. And that comment about Billy, did we grab that?
I would literally go scoop food and put it in a cup and, like, just crush it real quick before I got to the next meeting.
Whoa.
Whoa. Whoa, man.
Whoa.
No orange slice time? What the hell?
You mean you didn't get cookies? Whoa. Like, we didn't get lunch.
So that kind of stuff, look, like, if he's still... I don't necessarily think you need to have Brady to be like, and if you're running the place like, you know, military style, and it's like, okay, if you're 5 minutes early, I mean, you're 5 minutes late, and you know, and you can eat during the meeting.
The Coughlin stuff.
Yeah, that's fine. You have other hard asses there, but I don't know. Just I think this coupled with Gilmore and what is a clear contract squabble and him holding out and him trying to put Bill over a barrel. N'Keal Harry, that suckbag, trying to force a trade. And I think Dante Hightower, who's telling you via social media as well, he's not going to take any kind of pay cut and take Bill's crap. Like, he's lost power. If nothing else, he's lost the juice that he had. He's lost the cachet that he's had when Brady was here.
I've always thought the Patriot way was a myth. I've always felt that way. And it was always, you know, the Patriot way. This is how we do things down there. It's the Patriot way. You know, the Patriots are only going to sign certain kinds of players. No, they were always after a good deal. They'll sign anybody as long as the deal is right. From Albert Haynesworth on down to Antonio Brown. Yep. They will absolutely sign those guys. They'll sign the lowest of the low as long as the deal is right. And the quote-unquote Patriot way, this is why they win, was not the Patriot way. It was the Brady way.
Whoa.
I think we look at that now and we say it was the Brady way. You don't get lunch between meetings. I had to put food in a cup and crush it on the way to the next meeting.
Whoa.
And I don't think
it's like what we got to do in breaks.
Again, this guy's just an ass clown, so who like really cares what Cassius Marsh is saying? But do you think he's the only one that feels this way and has felt this way? No, of course not. And I don't think that he's lying about it either, especially when it came to him talking about how those meetings go. But Bill, do we have that clip again, or are we going to play that in the next segment?
No, we'll play that one coming back. Okay. In fact, Murray, we'll do that. The comments Murray's talking about. Jones loves it.
It really is. It's the best part of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah, no, one of them's right up Jones's alley. In fact, Murray just mentioning it, Jones lit up over there. His face got all smiley and happy.
Yeah, I did like it.
You get this warm feeling inside.
Cassius Marsh is my favorite football player.
I can gather, yes. Yeah. Jones said this before the show today. He heard these Cassius Marsh comments. He's like, oh, Billy, you got to get these.
Whoa.
You're going to get these specific comments. He was so happy. Seriously. He is. He's like, he's a spawn of Satan, Adam Jones. He really is. A little offspring of the devil himself.
Yeah.
So more Cassius Marsh. And we'll tell you that the Patriots are also answering back. Or former Patriots and Patriots coaches. We'll tell you who those people were when we come back on Felger and Mass.
Boston's home for sports. Felger and Mass. 95 The Sports Hub.
Hey, it's...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mass.
They've been incredibly consistent.
The only thing that's consistent is their inconsistency.
I don't think that's inconsistent.
Yeah, which is exactly what Murray said.
Am I misinterpreting it?
No.
Now, more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What are those, like, team meetings like? Is it, like, scary?
Dude, okay. So imagine, like, imagine you're working, like, a 9-to-5, right? Uh-huh. And, like, it's like a team meeting, right? So like, it's like almost like in a school assembly. Okay. And the dude who walks in is like the CEO, and he's like an old dude who, you know, like just plays no games. So like when he walks in, it's dead quiet.
Yeah.
Like everything stops. All phones get put away, all laughter, any type of little chit chat, done. Okay.
So when he enters the room, it's over.
Over. Nobody plays around with Bill. I mean, nobody plays with Bill for the most part.
So that's a comment from Cassius Marsh. That got Murray and Jones rolling earlier.
Yeah, because it turns out when he starts these things, Bill walks in like the prison scene in American Me.
Hold on, Murray. No, actually, forget it. Go.
Yeah, nobody's talking when I'm talking, fellas, so shut the F up. I wish I could actually say it in its entirety. But yes, he runs the thing like a prison, but which fine. But these things are an hour plus long. Go ahead, Jones.
Oh, well, I mean, it's just he goes through, it's a, as I said earlier, it's a bad working environment. And if you're 7-9, do you want to hear Bill drone on and on about who the owner is? Here's the GM's background. This is the offensive coordinator. This is actually how they ran their offense in the 1970s when I was in Detroit. And did you know when I was in Detroit, we ran a two tight end offense, and that's why we call it Detroit? And when I was with the Broncos, here's how they ran their defense. And when I was driving Ted Marchabrota around back when I first broke into the league, here's what they did. And meanwhile, Cassius Marsh, for a short period of time, and everybody else outside of like Matt Slater and Devin McCourty, their eyeballs roll into the back of their head, they check out, and they're bored to tears. Like, Cassius Marsh is cracking up. Whoever else is in the background is cackling away because it's so boring. It's so ridiculously boring, and it's so unnecessary. You know, we do what's best for the team. How is talking about what, you know, the Eagles did in 1975, how is that the best for your team?
It's not.
It's 2021. No one has an attention span. Like, you need to get in and get out of these meetings, not drone on about how they used to do it when you broke into the league with Ted Marchabrota.
I said it earlier. One of the great sins that you can commit as an employer, especially in 2021 with the short attention spans Jones is talking about, is to waste your employees' time. So you should be in and out of these things in 20 minutes tops. Quick synopsis of their defensive tendencies, how much they blitz, tells the quarterback might have, quirks of the stadium in the event you're rarely, if ever, there, what the timeline's going to be for you and the team. Bing, bang, boom. See you on the bus on the way to the airport. I want to know, does he do this for, like, you know, teams in the division? All right. All right, fellas, this week we got the Jets. Yeah, I know you think you're familiar with them, but
I know we played them in September.
Yeah, I know. What you might not know is they were first known as the New York Titans, and their first coach was Sammy Baugh. Now, you might have heard of Sammy Baugh. He wasn't just a quarterback. He also punted and was a defensive back. He's like an old grandpa in the chair, like, you know, to spinning a yarn. Like, enough. Bing, bang, boom. 20 minutes in and out. Like you said, Matthew, you know that, like, there's teacher's pets like Matthew Slater holding the arm up. Bill, you're...
They called him Slingin' Sammy, right, Bill?
Yeah. Can you tell us about Weeb Eubank, too? Can you circle back to... Can you go through the list of coaches when you were there? Could you... Bill, I got a question. Yeah, whereas Cassius Marsh is an ass clown, but anyone, like, I don't know, with a little bit of common sense just knows, like, can we talk about the important stuff here? Can we get out of here so I can go home and see my wife before I go on this stupid road trip?
So,
Bill, I got, Bill.
Hey, do we have homework?
What was it? Was when Parcells and, I got, tell us about Weeb Eubank. Can you go way back to that? I know you mentioned him earlier. Was he the winningest coach with the Jets? Like, shut up, Matthew. Like, I just want to talk about, is Zach Wilson going to play? Yeah. What's Robert Saleh going to run as a defense? Like, the important stuff. That's what we need to talk about.
So if you think Murray and Jones are exaggerating a little, they are.
I don't think
but,
so.
But we only gave you half of that comment from Marsh, so Billy can pick up the rest of it here. Here is Marsh again talking about Bill in these meetings. Go ahead, Billy.
Nobody plays with Bill for the most part. So he walks in there, and then he comes up to, like, a podium, and he addresses the team for like 45 minutes to an hour every morning. He talks about the GM's history, talks about the team's history, talks about defensive, offensive coordinators' history, the way that they used to run their defense, the way that they run their defense now, the history of all of the coaches.
And always with his same charisma and flair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hey, guys. It's
super, super exciting to listen to him talk. Yeah.
So, I love him. I don't know. I don't get why people don't like him. I love him.
Cassius Marsh, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look, it's one of these things where, again, now that Brady's gone and they've gone 7-9, this is what happens. People look at everything Bill does and said, boy, you're a real donkey. That's what you do is talk about the history of the team, the history of the coordinators. And I think there is value in that. There's information in there. What Bill's saying is understand who the guy is calling the defense on the other side of the field. Here's what he wants to do. Here's what they're going to try to do during the game, because historically he's wired this way. But when you go 7-9, guys like Cassius Marsh look at you and go, are you serious,
what
dude?
What the hell are we doing?
Okay, but do the players need to know that? The coaching staff need... Bill should cover all those bases.
The history of the GM.
The coaches should know. The coaches should be ready for everything. Here's how he used to run it. Hey, here's how they used to run their defense. They don't run it this way now for in-game adjustments and stuff like that. Fine. Back pocket that. Like, don't overwhelm the players. How many times do you hear this? Like, I've heard a million coaches say this over the years. We give our players, like, 3 keys, 5 keys to a game. We want them to only know about that. Well, are you giving them 3 to 5 keys, or are you telling them about what the GM did 30 years ago? Like, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't align. And so I think Bill just loves the history of football and gets off on the history of football, and he loves to do that. And he could get away with doing it when Brady was here, because Brady was going to win the game, and it didn't matter if he overwhelmed the players, because Brady would figure it out on the field. Now you're droning on, and Cam Newton's nodding off in meetings like everybody else. And next thing you know, you're 7-9.
I mean, is he holding pop quizzes? It's a lot of useless information, I think, for today's players. When, again, all they need is the pertinent information. Oh, fellas, we have the Falcons this week. Oh! Bill! Yeah, Matthew. Can you tell us in 1998 it was Dan Reeves who was the head coach, right? And it was Chris Chandler was the quarterback. Did you ever go up against him? Like, shut up, Matthew. It's like from the back. So, Matthew, shut up.
Shut up.
We just want to get out of this.
Stop asking for homework.
Oh, my God, it's comical. I love the Matthew Slater impersonation.
Bill!
The class nerd.
And Dan Reeves is also in Denver, right? Can you tell us about that, Bill?
Oh my gosh, it's so
true. An hour for that, those kind of meetings. It's just really, like, I'm offended, because thankfully we're very lucky here. You know how many times I knock on the wood? Like, we're very lucky. We really don't have meetings here. There's not a lot of, like, useless meetings. People don't want useless meetings in any walk of life, especially football players. Come on.
But Jones, to your point, just quickly, Maureen, I'm sorry. I've heard a lot of people come out of there, and I mean players, former players come out of there and say, Bill's meetings at the end of the week, particularly the ones, the game prep meetings, are out of this world.
I'm sure.
That Bill would sit there and say, okay, guys, look, we're going to simplify here. Here are the if we do these three things, we're going to win this game.
Yeah. Okay? You got to make it to Friday.
Right. Players rave about that with Belichick, that he would identify the real key points of the game.
Not all of them.
But the beginning of the week apparently is hell. So you have to sit through the lecture of what the history of the Jets is, or the history of the coaching staff, and everything else in there. Oh, my gosh. Murray, that Matthew Slater is so good.
Well, the Broncos started as an AFL team. I'd like to tell you a little bit about the AFL.
Oh, I know what other teams are in the AFL. Bill. Matthew, shut up.
Yeah, we all know you know the AFL. Yeah. You've been here a decade, Matthew.
It's a lot of these, like, people crumpling up their notes. Come on, guys.
Right. Meanwhile, Cassius Marsh has an empty cup of snacks. He's like, come on. What are we eating again?
So there are people representing the Patriots side of this. Deion Branch, even Joe Judge, currently the former... currently the coach of the Giants, former special teams coordinator of the Patriots. We'll tell you what they said after Jones gets you caught up on headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.